The following message comes to you from the pulpit of Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church in Ackerman, Mississippi. We invite you to visit Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church for worship services every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Macedonia is located at 11 Staten Road on Highway 15, 5 miles north of Ackerman, Mississippi. For more information about Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, you may visit our website at macedonia-pbc.org.
Let's turn together back to the book of Ruth this morning. We have looked through the first two chapters. We want to look at the third chapter this morning. And we've seen the amazing guiding providence of the hand of God bringing a young Moabite widow from the land of the Moabites through the conduit of her mother-in-law Naomi into the land of Bethlehem, Judah. And as she arrives, as the Lord's timing is always perfect, she arrives at the beginning of the barley harvest, and she goes out to labor and to glean, to care for her Naomi. And by the guiding providence of God, unbeknownst to her, she arrives in the field of Boaz, who is a near kinsman that we're going to see later on in this account how important that kinsman redeemer is, that has the ability to redeem back not just the land of a deceased relative, but also the wife and the widow and the family of a deceased relative. And we see the guiding providence of God, that Ruth has been comes from this foreign land, and now she's been guided into the field of Boaz. And in that field, she finds handfuls of purpose and protection and provision. And then she arrives back home. And I just love the accounts in the story because she has no idea what's happening. She has no idea the way that the providence of God is unfolding, but it's unbeknownst to her. But then she comes back that night and says, and tells Naomi that she was gleaning in the field of Boaz, who is her kinsman. And then Naomi can see some of the dots that the Lord's connecting. She can see some of the guiding providence of God. And we leave off at the end of chapter 2 that, you know, this heavy climax, if you will, of her arriving in the field of Boaz and him providing for her and with handfuls of purpose. And now she's going to be gleaning in his field for the rest of the harvest, for the rest of the period of the crop there. But now we fast forward all the way to the end of the barley harvest. And again, you have the harvest is very important dates in Israelites' history. You have the Feast of the First Fruits, which is the very first things that come in. And then also after that day, there's a 50-day gap. And then after that, you have the Feast of Pentecost. Pentecost means 50. Pentecost that we see in the New Testament, the day of Pentecost in Acts chapter 2, that lines up with the Jewish feast of Pentecost, okay? And all of that is determined by the harvest, the first fruits of the harvest. So, from start to finish, from when they're beginning the barley harvest to now it coming to the full, and which would be the Feast of the First Fruits, if you will, and then coming now to the full end of the barley harvest, that's usually between 40 and 50 days. So a month and a half that she's been laboring in Boaz's field. But now it's getting toward the end of the harvest. And some of the precursors that Naomi had seen and the guiding providence of God, it had not got to its full fruition and climax the way that she perceived, the way that Naomi perceived that it should have. So Naomi decides to kind of ramp things up a little bit. Okay? Ruth chapter 3. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said unto her, "My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, and that it may be well with thee? And now is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maidens thou wast. Behold, he winnoweth barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie. And thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay thee down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. And she said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me I will do. And she went down under the floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law bade her. And when Boaz is eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. And it came to pass at midnight that the man was afraid and laid and turned himself. And behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, who art thou? And she answered, I am Ruth, thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. And he said, blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, insomuch as thou followest not young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, fear not, I will do to thee all that thou requirest, for all the people of my city doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And now it is true that I am thy near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning, that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the part of the kinsman. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman, then will I do the part of a kinsman to thee. As the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning. Now again, Naomi has seen here at the end of chapter 2 some of the guiding hand and the providence of God, of Ruth, just happening. Her hap was to light upon the field of Boaz, who just happened, by the providence of God, to be their near kinsman of the family of Elimelech. Now, we're going to see that he's not the nearest kinsman, but he is a near kinsman. But Naomi and Ruth are still in a very destitute condition. They're very thankful, certainly, for the handfuls of purpose that not only Boaz gave them that first day, but no doubt Boaz had given them handfuls of purpose in the weeks following that as well. He was caring for them, but the harvest was about to be over. And they were still needing a more secure position than what they were currently in. And it appears that Naomi was not really satisfied with the way that things were progressing. So she devises her own plan, devises her own method for how we can get to our intended result, to how we can speed up the process. And Naomi presents this to Ruth. I believe Naomi is doing this with somewhat of a selfish attitude, not thinking through some of the repercussions in the manner that she ought to. But yet when she presents it to Ruth, notice, it's all about you. My daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee, that it may be well with thee? I'm all about you. I'm all about your well-being. But she is actually suggesting to put both Ruth and Boaz in the possibility of a compromising position. Okay? But she says, now, in verse 2, is not Boaz of our kindred, with whose maiden thou wast? Behold, he went with barley tonight in the threshing floor. Wash thyself, therefore, and anoint thee, and put thy raiment upon thee, and get thee down to the floor. But make not thyself known unto the man until he shall have done eating and drinking. And it shall be, when he lieth down, that thou shalt mark the place where he shall lie, and thou shalt go in and uncover his feet and lay down, and he will tell thee what thou shalt do. And Ruth was obedient to the request of her mother-in-law. She said unto her, all that thou sayest unto me, I will do. Now, she's giving her advice to go down to the threshing floor of Boaz, but to wait until he's eaten and drunken, and then come down and stay in the same room as him, and then discuss what will end up being the marriage proposal. Now, Naomi should have had the foresight to know. I mean, these are two virtuous, this is a virtuous man and a virtuous woman, but at the same time, any person, regardless of their character, when they're put in a compromising position, they can make poor decisions. And not only is she telling her to go alone to the threshing floor of Boaz, she's saying, wait purposefully until he's eaten, until he's drunken a little bit. I don't mean he's drunk, but he also has, and typically they would partake of wine at supper. And he obviously would not be fully as zoned in as he would be during the day. Again, she is giving her advice that is intentionally putting both Ruth and Boaz in the possibility of a compromising position. Even if the end result is a good thing, which is ultimately to request marriage, which is ultimately to request him to redeem Naomi and Ruth, just because the end result is a good thing does not mean that the ends justify the means. Okay? Do you understand? Just because the end result is a good thing does not mean the way that you choose to go about it is the right thing. Especially if we attempt to circumvent the will and the timing and the guidance of the Lord. In Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 9, I think about this verse so often because this is the internal struggle that I deal with on a daily basis to a large degree. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 9. A man's heart deviseth his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. Unfortunately, my mind is geared toward a math formula, and I'm always trying to solve for X in the Lord's will. I'm trying to evaluate all of the information, all of the inputs that I see, and based on all of the information that I think that I have, trying to reach a determination about, first of all, what the end result is, what the answer is, but what is the best means for me to get to that intended result. And unfortunately, I have a problem with wanting to devise my own way. And the Lord is very much in the process of culling out that attitude through multiple circumstances and through things that don't go according to plan, that I don't have control over, and He's consistently reminding me that it's not up to me to devise my way, it's up to me to have faith and trust the Lord to direct my steps. And that's what faith is. Faith is trusting God as a more reliable guide and provider than me devising my own way. And fortunately, I've been able, I believe the Lord has given me clarity in quite a few different circumstances of times that I've tried to devise my own way, that I've tried to manipulate the circumstance to get what I believe was the best intended result, and usually it flops and it does not go well. And the Lord can allow me to see very clearly that His way is always the best way. When He's directing my steps, when He is guiding in His time and in His way, especially as we think about Ruth and Boaz, you know, think about Ruth, 10 years that she spent as a widow in Moab before they even got to Israel. And Boaz, who at this time was an older man who had not been married, who was a very faithful, diligent businessman, but he had not found that area of his life to have a wife and to have a family. And don't you know that he got up a lot of mornings maybe trying to devise his own way too. But it's pretty amazing to see when the Lord is actually directing the steps of everyone whom the Lord is guiding. But here's an important point that we need to be reminded of. That God's providence is always an overruling providence. Okay? Now, what I mean by that is that God, when I say that we wait on the Lord to guide and the Lord to direct our steps, that does not mean that we wait on the Lord to do everything from A to Z. Because He doesn't. Okay? It's incumbent upon us to make decisions. It's incumbent upon us, like I tell you all the time, to ask. But then you have to seek and knock too. You have to seek the guidance of the Lord, but you also have to ask for the guidance of the Lord, but you also have to seek out certain paths. You know, I've been spending time on the radio talking about open doors. And open doors don't just apply to the preaching of the gospel. Certainly, we see very evident examples of that in the New Testament. But how do you determine if the Lord has opened a door? Well, the only way that I know how to determine if the Lord has opened a door or not is try to go through that door. And knock on that door, and guess what? If you knock on that door and it doesn't open it, or if you go through that door and the door hits you in the face, you know, that's a pretty good indication that, you know, maybe the Lord hadn't opened that door. But understand, the Lord does not deal with His children today the way He dealt with people in the Old Testament. You're not going to see a dream that tells you what decision to make. You're not going to see a lamb out in the distance. You're not going to see a star that's going to guide you to the appropriate place that you are to work, or a star that's going to guide you to the place that you are to live, or a star that's going to guide you to who your spouse is. Insert major life decision. You are not going to see some external sign that's going to guide you to the exact right decision. Because guess what? If you did, we would be walking by sight and not by faith. We would place confidence. And that's why the Lord doesn't. Jesus said there was a time for signs. There was a time that God revealed His will to His people in a very divine and miraculous way. But that was before He inspired the full canon of Scripture. Okay? And Jesus said, as that time period was concluding, where He did deal with people in visions and prophets and signs, but the canon of Scripture was getting close to being closed, and the way that He dealt and guided His people in that way was getting close to ceasing, Jesus Himself said that an evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. And I know people that have tried to make these decisions on a sign, but the problem is, and I can, they'll tell you from their own experience, the problem is you don't place confidence in God, you place confidence in the sign. Are you with me? If you get to the point where you will say that I have to see something that is abnormal from the normal course of life, and I have to see that sign, then if the Lord gives you that one time, your desire is you're going to want to never make a decision again until you see that again. And we're commanded to not walk by sight, but to walk by faith, to trust in the Lord. And what's going to happen is you're going to place faith in the sign. Do you understand? Instead of faith in the Lord. So, how do we make decisions that are not clear? They're not. The Lord is not going to have. You know, He did with was it Belshazzar in the book of Daniel, where He literally wrote on the wall, "This is what's going to happen to you." The Lord's not going to do that for you. Okay, why? Because He's given you His word. He's called men to preach His word. He expects you to be reading His word. And the Lord, by the guidance of His Holy Spirit, will instruct and guide and reveal what His will is if you ask, seek, and knock. Okay? The Lord directing your steps is not like the wise men following a star to the place that they're going to go. No, we are forced, for better or for worse, and always for better, by the way, we are forced to walk by faith. Now, what's important to understand is that God knows your frame. He knows that our nature is to want to devise our own way. So God can take poor decisions and poor motives, even if they had the right intentions. Because Naomi, I hope that you understand what I'm saying. Naomi had a good intended result that, hey, we need a kinsman. You need a husband. We need the provision and the protection of Boaz. But the way to get that is not you sending your daughter-in-law dressed up in the middle of the night to his threshing floor. Okay? That was Naomi's way. But you know what? That does not excuse her making a poor decision, but it also shows us that God can even take poor decisions like that and use it in his providence to still bless and guide to get to where the Lord intends for it to be. Okay? So Naomi's making, I believe, giving very poor and selfish advice, putting Ruth and Boaz in a compromising position. But you know what? The Lord, in his overruling providence, still uses that to guide his children to the intended result, which ultimately, it's been evident since the very first chapter that the Lord is guiding both parties for Boaz to redeem Ruth, for Boaz to be her husband. And God takes this poor circumstance at the advice of Naomi and still uses that and makes, God is always in the business of giving beauty for ashes. Okay? Making good out of the situations that we mess up. That does not give us a liberty to act like it doesn't matter the decisions that we make, because it does. But we also need to be reminded that God is able to mess up, God is able to fix any situation that we can mess up. Okay? So now, Boaz has really only seen Ruth when she's hot, sweaty, and laboring out in the field. But now she's being advised by Naomi to dress up, wash yourself, anoint yourself, put nice perfume on. So she goes and she cleans herself up, goes down to the threshing floor, goes down to the floor of Boaz. And Boaz had eaten and he drunk and his heart was merry. And he went to lie down at the end of the heap of corn. And she came and softly and uncovered his feet and laid her down. Now, this was really at the peak of the barley harvest because it was so busy and at such a peak time that he was essentially staying in the threshing floor. He was working all night, so to say. He took a little break, got something to eat, and took a little nap before he was probably going to have to get back up and work some more. And she goes in the middle of the night down to the threshing floor, and she came softly and uncovered his feet. Now, that phrase is not anything that is sexually improper. It is simply a custom in the Jewish culture. I think there's a lot of significance in that we don't want to spend the time to dwell on. But we're going to find out in the next chapter that part of the rite of a kinsman redeemer, and if someone was not willing to perform the duty of a kinsman redeemer, is that they had their shoe unloosed and they had to walk around without a shoe. I believe there's some significance in her uncovering his feet and the future proposal that she's going to give for him to now cover her with his skirt. Skirt is the garment. His feet is uncovered, but now when he covers himself back up, he's not just going to cover her feet. Hey, his feet. He's going to cover Ruth and Naomi as well. But this is something that is simply a Jewish custom that is not anything to be concerned about. But unfortunately, phrases like this, it's very unfortunate in commentaries and other ways it's been presented to present this in a very negative light. But understand, this is just simply a Jewish custom of uncovering your feet. And then also, the fact of the matter is, you uncover his feet, he's going to get cold, he's going to wake up, so we can have something to talk about. And it came to pass at midnight, the man was afraid and turned himself, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, "Who art thou?" I said, "I am Ruth, thine handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." He wakes up in the middle of the night, okay? But obviously he's a little bit startled, because there's a woman here that wouldn't hear when I went to sleep. "Who are you, waking up at midnight?" And he was afraid. And he said, "Who are you?" "I am Ruth, thy handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman." Now, essentially what Ruth is doing here in this very unique, odd scene at midnight in the threshing floor of Boaz is she essentially proposes marriage to him. Now, it's customary in our culture for a young man to propose marriage to a young lady. But in this instance, and this was unique circumstances, okay? Certainly. But she actually proposes to Boaz, saying, "Look, I know that me and Naomi are in this condition of being widows, or family, our husbands have passed away, and there's this provision in the law to be a kinsman, and to be a kinsman redeemer, you had to have the right relationship, you had to have the ability or the finances to be able to redeem, and you also had to be willing to do it." We'll see that more in the next chapter. And then a fourth kind of subcomponent is that you also had to be willing to redeem the entire possession. Because the man who was the nearer kinsman, he was willing to take the land of Elimelech, but he wasn't willing to take Ruth to be his wife. So you also had to be willing to partake of all of that. So she essentially requests, and there's a lot of significance here, "Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid." The skirt means a garment, or an overcoat, and it's the same word that's used in chapter 2 and in verse 12 that Boaz has said about Ruth, that you have come to trust the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou art come to trust, the shadow of the wings. That's the same, under whose wings thou art come to trust. That's the same word for skirt that is in chapter 3 here. So he's saying, essentially, you have placed your confidence in the Lord to cover and protect you. And now she's coming to Boaz and saying, "Now I'm requesting you to cover me and protect me in the same way that the Lord has." But she's saying, essentially, "Will you be my kinsman redeemer?" And Boaz, at midnight, groggy, just woke up. "Who are you?" "Oh, you just proposed marriage to me." "Oh, okay. Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter." I want you to notice the integrity with which Boaz is still dealing with the situation, okay? "Blessed be thou of the Lord, my daughter, for thou hast showed more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning, insomuch that thou followest not young men, whether rich or poor." Now, what was she showed more kindness in the latter end, so what was the kindness in the beginning? Well, this is a young lady who had her whole life in front of her, so to say, but yet she chose to hitch her wagon to a bitter old woman named Naomi, who came back and said, "Call me Mara. The Lord's against me. The whole world's against me." It must have been pretty miserable to hang around Naomi all the time, honestly. But you know what? She loved her. And she said, "Wherever you go, I'm going to go. Your God's going to be my God. Your people's going to be my people." And she made and displayed a willingness to sacrifice for the good of someone else and showed a tremendous amount of kindness toward Naomi in the circumstance that even got her to Bethlehem, Judah. She put Naomi's needs ahead of her own. And now he says that you've even showed me more kindness in the latter end than at the beginning. In other words, it's even more impressive the type of sacrifice that you've made in offering or requesting for me to marry you than you had in sacrificing this with Naomi. You know, think about Ruth as a young lady. Yes, she was a Moabite. Yes, there were some ethnic cultural issues that she probably wasn't the most popular person in Israel. But at the same time, she could have very easily went out and sought a young man that was her age that she cared about, and that may have cared for her. That may have provided for her, but that would have left Naomi out in the cold. Okay? Who is going to be the only person that can care, not just for me, but legally restore her possessions and legally care for Naomi going forward? Who is the only person who has the legal right to do that in Israel? It's a kinsman. Do you understand that Ruth chose a man that wasn't just going to care for her, but she chose someone based on the condition that this is also going to be a person who's going to care for Naomi? Because I've made a commitment to her. I made a commitment that wherever you go, I'm going to go. I'm going to provide for you to the best of my ability. I'm going to love you. Your God's going to be my God. Your people's going to be my people. I made a commitment to you unto death. And she was so faithful to that commitment that she didn't choose one of the young, good-looking guys that was her age. She chose a man that could provide for both her and Naomi. Do you understand? And Boaz realizes that. Boaz realizes the sacrifice that she's making. That she's not going and just trying to find a marriage and a husband herself and just being selfish and caring for herself. She is making sure that Naomi is provided for as well. And it's surprising to Boaz that a young lady that's no doubt attractive but also a good, godly, virtuous young lady, it's surprising to him that, and so as much as thou followest not young men, whether poor or rich. In other words, Ruth, there's a sense in which you could have had your pick, but you're choosing an older man. And now, my daughter, fear not. I will do to thee all that thou requirest. For all the city doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. Ruth had made a significant impact on the community that she was in just a month and a half. Okay? Now, this was the general consensus of the community, but also, no doubt, Boaz had been asking around about her too. Boaz had been doing his due diligence. Because I think I could say from Boaz's perspective, he saw the type of character, the virtuous character that Ruth had. And even though she had not requested for him to redeem her, I think he was thinking about that in the back of his mind. Because, you know, when she presents this, by the way, he doesn't say, well, I don't really know if I've got enough money to be able to do it. I've really got to consult with some people. I really got to talk. And no, he said, I'm doing it, and I'm going to do it first thing daylight tomorrow. This is not the first time that he had considered this. But in his mind, he looks at Ruth. He sees what a hard worker she is, what a virtuous woman she is, a godly woman. And in his mind, he's saying, there's no way that that kind of a woman would choose an old guy like me. And all the city knows that she's a virtuous woman. But when she makes the request, he says, first thing tomorrow, I'm going to make sure that you and Naomi are taken care of. Now, he says in verse 12, yes, it's true that I'm a near kinsman. Howbeit, there is a kinsman nearer than I. In other words, there is literally a pecking order. You have the closest relative, and then if that person refuses or passes, then it goes to the next in line. And there was someone that had a closer relationship to Elimelech and Naomi than he did. So legally, he had to present that to him first. And then if he passed on that, then he could enact for him to be the redeemer. Okay? But he says, yes, I'm a near kinsman, but there's somebody closer than me. Tarry this night, and it shall be in the morning that if he will perform unto thee the part of a kinsman, well, let him do the kinsman's part. But if he will not do the part of a kinsman to thee, then will I do the part of the kinsman unto thee, as the Lord liveth, lie down until the morning. Boaz has consistently displayed this godly, virtuous character. The same word that is used to call Ruth a virtuous woman is the same word that describes Boaz at the beginning of chapter 2, that he is a mighty man of wealth. And it didn't just have to do with money. He's a mighty man of virtue, of character, of a rich character, if you will. And Boaz, I don't believe, expected, and I think that's why he wasn't proactive. He didn't just have Ruth show up in his field, and he goes the next day and said, all right, I'm going to marry you. I'm going to redeem you. Let's get this ball rolling. No, he sat back, and he thought the whole time, look, I'm going to care for her while she's in her field. I'm going to help out her Naomi while I can. But at the end of the day, I know she's not going to pick me, so I don't really have to worry about that. But if she does, I'm going to be ready. But I doubt it. But he displays a attitude of self-sacrifice in presenting this to this other near kinsman that I believe is such an important component for the type of virtuous man that any young lady or any lady in general should be pursuing and should be attracted to. Because he says, I'm going to present this to the near kinsman. And you know what? If he is willing to take this role upon him, well. If he's not, I'm willing to do it. But I want you to understand, he says, it will be good if this other near kinsman chooses to redeem you. And what he's doing there is he is saying, what I am concerned about is you and Naomi. What I am concerned about are you two being taken care of and you being redeemed. And you know what? If I present this to this other near kinsman and he takes that role upon him and I don't have the ability to marry you, that is still good because you are taken care of, because your needs are provided for. And I'll tell you, that type of self-sacrificial attitude that says, look, I want you to be cared for no matter what, even if it is a detriment to me, that says that you have a need and I want that need to be cared for. And you know what? Even if I'm not the person that provides that need, but more than that, if I'm not the person that enjoys the blessing of, yes, I would love to be your husband, but you know what? If that's not the Lord's will, if that's not the Lord's will for me to take that role, that is still fine because I know you're going to be taken care of. That is the type of self-sacrificial attitude that displays the same type of self-sacrificial love that Christ had toward the church. Because he looked at the church and he said, my only desire is for them to be taken care of eternally. And you know what? It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt me. In the short term, it's not something that's going to be pleasant. It's not something that I'm necessarily excited about doing, but I am willing to endure the sacrifice for my bride, for someone that I love. Okay? Because at this point, Boaz wasn't even insured of her being his bride. But what was he concerned about? He wasn't concerned about getting a wife. He was concerned about the provision and the care and the protection of Naomi and Ruth. And he looks at that and he says, you know what? Even if I don't have the privilege of marrying you, I'm going to make sure that you're taken care of tomorrow morning, no matter what. And I'll tell you, that is the type of self-sacrificial agape love that should be attractive to a young lady and to a young man. Because I'll tell you, when you find someone that says, I care about your needs more than my needs, when I care about your future, even at the sacrifice and the detriment of my future, that's getting very close to exhibiting the type of love that Christ had toward His church. And those are two components of a beautiful Ephesians chapter 5 marriage. That you have a husband that displays this sacrificial love and care and devotion to the bride. And a wife sees that and joyfully submits to the authority and the protection and the provision of her husband because of the love that he is displaying to her. You know, we talked in Ruth chapter 2 about the attributes of a godly spouse that are exhibited in Ruth and Boaz that should be attractive to other godly people. You need to be laboring in the right field, right? We talked about that. You need to be in the field of Boaz. You need to be in the kingdom of God. You need to be in the church. And you know what? If you faithfully labor and you faithfully serve in the right field, doing the right things, exhibiting a virtuous character, whether you're a man or a woman, when you exhibit that virtuous character, that virtuous character will be attractive to other virtuous people. And you know what? We see the guiding hand of providence all throughout this book. And if you're laboring in the right field and serving the Lord faithfully, exhibiting the type of character that both Ruth and Boaz had anyway, but they're exhibiting that through their actions, that type of character is attractive to other people who have that same character. And I'll tell you, when you put a mighty man of virtue, a mighty man of wealth, and a virtuous woman that all the city knows is virtuous, and you put them together, that is a beautiful union to the glory of God. Okay? Now, he's also caring for Ruth's reputation, because he sends her back home, but he makes sure she's wearing a veil the whole time, by the way. I think that's important. You know, Boaz dealt with this whole situation very honorably. I mean, he has a young lady in his room by himself in the middle of the night, and an ungodly man could have very easily made an ungodly decision. But instead, he is dealing in a very virtuous way because he's exhibiting the character that he has anyway, right? And he goes home and he says, I'm going to make sure that I give you some barley to take home to Naomi, because if somebody sees you leaving the threshing floor early in the morning and you don't have any grain, somebody might say, what was she there for? That's how the rumor mill starts. So he says, I'm going to make sure I'll give you plenty of grain to where if anybody sees you, they don't have any ability to impugn your godly, virtuous reputation. So he gives her that. Bring your veil unto me. And he gave her 6 measures of barley. She sent her back. Sent her back home to Naomi. She returns, tells Naomi all that had happened. Verse 17. These 6 measures of barley gave he me, for he said unto me, go not empty in thy mother-in-law. Again, caring for her reputation and the perception. And she said, sit still, my daughter, until thou know how the matter will fall. For the man will not be in rest until he had finished the thing this day. Now, there's a Lord willing, the next message in this book is going to be focusing on the kinsman redeemer. And certainly that's true of Boaz, but man, that's pointing us toward the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, where Naomi says he will not rest until he has finished what he came to do, until he has finished the thing this day. But back in just the narrative of just Ruth and Boaz, she requested for him to be the redeemer. And I hope that you understand the type of self-sacrificial attitude that is exhibited by him saying, I'm going to make sure that tomorrow morning you and Naomi are taken care of no matter what, even if I don't have the privilege of marrying you, which is probably what I would prefer. I'm going to make sure that you're taken care of no matter what. And you know what? Naomi knew that too. Because he's going to finish the thing today. Either this other kinsman is going to take care of us, or he's going to redeem us. But I have full confidence in Boaz that by the end of the day, we will be secure. We will be taken care of. I tell you, that is some impressive, godly, virtuous character that our men should be exhibiting in the service of God. And the same virtuous, godly character that Ruth exhibits is the same type of virtue. And certainly we have a great depiction of that in Proverbs chapter 31. We know the depiction of the virtuous woman. But as we've seen in a prior chapter, if you're laboring in the right field, if you're serving the Lord faithfully, you're exhibiting those characteristics, there comes a point where you kind of have to let go of the rope and say, Lord, I'm going to quit devising my way. Lord, direct my steps. Guide my heart. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. But here's the kicker. Lean not to your own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. And we see the Lord directing the path of Ruth and Boaz, and even overruling poor decisions. And I'll tell you, if there's anything I need in my life, it is mercy, which mercy is not giving me what I do deserve. I need the overruling providence of God when I make bad decisions, because that's something that I've proven to be very good at. And I need the Lord to clean up my mistakes. That's not an excuse for me to keep messing up. But the fact of the matter is that we don't see everything that he sees. We can't understand everything that he understands. And he knows that. Serve God faithfully to the best of our ability. But when we end up short, we need to say, Lord, give us mercy. Give us grace. It's like the closing to many of the epistles. Grace and peace be multiplied unto you. And certainly I need a lot of unmerited favor multiplied unto me. And I know that you do too.
We thank you for listening to today's message and invite you to visit Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church for worship services every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Macedonia is located at 11 Staten Road on Highway 15, 5 miles north of Ackerman, Mississippi. For further information about Macedonia Primitive Baptist Church, you may visit our website at macedonia-pbc.org.